When it comes to North Korea, we have a problem. That none of us want a complete collapse in North Korea.
North Korea detains another U.S. citizen. It's Monday, May 8th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hello and welcome. Join us online, too, at VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, relief about the state of U.S.-Australian relations. Look up, China has a new plane in the air. Foreign students find hope in New York City. Los Angeles residents welcome new visitors. We always welcome you to VOA Asia. North Korea says it has detained another U.S. citizen, accusing him of committing, quote, hostile acts. The North's official news agency, KCNA, said Kim Hak-sung was detained on Saturday. The report said he had worked for the Pyongyang University of Science and Technology, the only privately funded university in North Korea, and a school that is also unusual for the large size of its foreign staff. In a statement, the U.S. State Department said the security of U.S. citizens is one of the department's highest priorities. When a U.S. citizen is reported to be detained in North Korea, we work with the Swedish embassy in Pyongyang to try to secure their freedom. Kim Hak-sung is the fourth American citizen in North Korean custody, and his detention comes as tensions increase between Pyongyang and Washington over North Korea's nuclear weapons development program. U.S. President Donald Trump has dispatched an aircraft carrier strike group to the waters off the Korean Peninsula as a warning against the communist nation's military ambitions. North Korea has in the past detained U.S. citizens to use them as bargaining chips in its negotiations with Washington. Paul French, author of the book North Korea, State of Paranoia, says Pyongyang uses these bargaining situations for the larger issue of maintaining its isolationist regime, and that in turn drives the Western economic aid response against any discussion of reunification.
When it comes to North Korea, we have a problem. What we have to do is just keep this drip feed of aid, and that's the dirty little secret, that none of us want a complete collapse in North Korea. South Korea is a strong economy. It is a modern economy now. It is a consumer economy, but it is still reasonably fragile. Young people in South Korea want to have all the consumer goodies that all the rest of us have, and they enjoy that. They don't want to have to pay, 90% tax to support the reunification of Korea. Japan remains in a long-term recession. China wants to spend any money it has on continuing to build China and continuing to promote stability in China so that the Communist Party there stays in power. I don't think the American taxpayer wants the bill for North Korean reunification. Europe doesn't want the bill for that. It would be multiples and multiples of what the bill was for German reunification. And I think that the dirty little secret that we have to accept is that we are going to have to keep this drip feed of aid going into the country, however much we do not like the leadership of that country, that stops another famine happens, that stops starvation happening. And that is, unfortunately, not great news for the 22 million ordinary people of North Korea. But at the moment in the world situation, it's about all we can do. And I think it is what everyone really thinks about doing.
What are some of the myths we're holding about North Korea at the current time?
Well, I think the biggest myth, or at least the most dangerous myth, as someone who's sort of, visited North Korea on a number of occasions, which is not necessarily an easy thing to do, particularly for Americans, of course, the ordinary North Korean people and the daily life that they have is difficult and highly politicized and highly regimented and with a lot of surveillance, but that they are essentially normal people. I think a lot of the concerns that we have about the North Koreans are that we almost see them as like this robotic nation. The few images we get are always of military parades or something like that. But these are people who get up in the morning and kiss their kids goodbye and go off to work, and the kids go off to school and so on. There are 22 million people trying to live a fairly normal life there in the circumstances, despite the sort of rather strange lifestyle of the leadership and the elite.
Last month, Pyongyang detained Kim Sang-duk, a Pyongyang University accounting professor in his 50s. It accused of acts of hostility aimed to overturn the regime of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. North Korea said Kim Sang-duk was arrested for committing criminal acts, but did not elaborate. In the case of Kim Hak-sung, authorities said a relevant institution is now conducting detailed investigations into his crimes. In a 2015 message on the website of a Korean-Brazilian church in Sao Paulo, Kim Hak-song said he was a Christian missionary planning to start an experimental farm at the Pyongyang school and was trying to help the North Korean people learn to become self-sufficient. Last year, Otto Warmbier, a University of Virginia student, was sentenced to 15 years of hard labor in prison after he confessed to trying to steal a propaganda banner. Kim Jong-chul, born a South Korean but believed to have U.S. citizenship, is serving 10 years of hard labor for subversion. These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on VOAnews.com. North Korea detains fourth U.S. citizen. Indonesia says 2 days after prison break, 200 inmates at large. Some South Koreans hope to thaw ties with the North if Moon is elected. China to strengthen its controls over the internet. Nepalese climber hoping to be Everest's oldest conqueror dies trying. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues as we follow up on two important stories that were developing at the end of last week. First, U.S. President Donald Trump and Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull did finally see each other in New York, their first meeting since a fractious phone call earlier this year in which they argued over a controversial refugee deal. The two leaders reaffirmed close ties between their two nations. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports observers in Australia expressed relief at the apparent easing of tensions.
There was much conjecture about the mood and tone of the leaders' talks in New York following a testy phone call between the pair earlier this year when US President Donald Trump chided Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull over an agreement reached with the Obama administration last November to send refugees held in Australian offshore migrant camps to the United States. Those tensions appear to have eased, and the contentious refugee deal now seems likely to go ahead. Trump said reporting of the phone call was a little bit of fake news and praised the bilateral relationship.
America and Australia are old friends and really natural partners. And with your help, we will remain so for a very, very long time to come.
Brendan Thomas Noon, a research fellow at the United States Studies Center at the University of Sydney, says officials in Canberra will be relieved. Tensions caused by that testy phone call 3 months ago have eased.
I think it did shock the Australian side quite a bit, but obviously 3 months on and the fact that Vice President Pence and President Trump now have reaffirmed the deal definitely will calm some nerves, I think, in the government.
Australia's Labor opposition leader Bill Shorten suggested that Turnbull had been disrespected by being forced to wait for 3 hours for a brief meeting with the US president. However, many Australian commentators believe the delay was caused by understandable domestic political necessities. President Trump had delayed travelling to New York for the 30-minute meeting to remain in Washington while the health care bill replacement passed the House of Representatives. Turnbull, however, seemed unperturbed and said the president had renewed America's commitment to peace and stability in the Asia-Pacific region. Analysts believe the Australia-US relationship has been reset following the leaders' meeting in New York, where they discussed economic and national security concerns as well as migration issues. A bilateral military alliance dates back to the early 1950s. Trump has promised an official visit to Australia. President Obama travelled to Australia on two occasions. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
The second story we've been following is the more than four-year aftermath of the horrific gang rape of a 23-year-old woman in New Delhi. Now India's Supreme Court has upheld the death penalty for four men convicted in that brutal assault that led to her death. The decision brings to a close a case that triggered an unprecedented wave of public outrage and turned a global spotlight on sexual violence against women in India. Calling it brutal, diabolical, and barbaric, The Supreme Court said the crime shook the conscience of society. The court said the crime's perverse nature put it in the rarest of rare categories and called for the death penalty. Women activists like Ranjana Kumari, who heads the Center for Social Research in New Delhi, hailed Friday's judgment as a landmark decision.
I think this is a real clear message that you cannot get away with it. You will not be spared. You will be punished. And this is something I hope will have a deep impact on the nation's psyche of the people who create all kinds of conditions of crime and commit crime against women.
Out of the six charged with a gang rape, one hanged himself in prison. The juvenile involved has been released after spending 3 years in detention. All six were poor migrants living in a crowded and poor neighborhood. The four men sentenced to death are all in their 20s. A defense lawyer for three of them said that he would file a review petition to the Chief Justice. 4 months after the crime, the streets of New Delhi were filled with angry protests demanding justice for the victim. Many protesters held banners calling for the death penalty. By the standards of India's slow-moving justice system, the intense spotlight on the case ensured that it drew to a close in fewer than 5 years. Many cases drag on for much longer. The gang rape prompted the government to speed up trials for rape and toughen penalties for offenders. As Mariam Dahwali of the All India Democratic Women's Association notes, tighter laws do not appear to have been a deterrent, as the number of reported cases of sexual assaults have not come down.
Women are very, very vulnerable today in our country. The laws have to be implemented, punishments have to be given. This will send a strong message.
On the positive side, activists say more women now have shown the courage to report a crime that they had rarely been spoken of earlier, but it's now very much a part of public debate. Happening now in Asia, India Space Agency has its first self-funded satellite in orbit to provide communication services to all eight countries of the South Asian Association for Regional Cooperation. The more than $36 million project does not involve Pakistan, which pulled out of the project. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're glad that you're with us today, listening to VOA Asia. Thank you so much. China has carried out a test flight for its first domestically built medium-sized passenger jet. The C-919 can carry up to 175 passengers and aims to compete with industry champions such as the Boeing 737 and Airbus 320. But as VOA's Bill Ide reports, the milestone trip is only a first jaunt in a much longer journey.
The first flight of the C-919 is an important step for state-owned Commercial Aircraft Corporation of China, or COMAC, and its bid to compete for a share of the global market, a market estimated to be worth trillions of dollars over the next 20 years. A sizable portion of that total will go to the world's fastest-growing aviation market, China. And given that aviation is a key national industry, domestic airlines will be expected to show their support, says aerospace engineer Tong Wan.
I think the C-919 will be viewed as a pillar plan or master project. Whether local airlines like it or not, I think the majority of them will have to place orders for C-919 to fill their demand for single-aisle, narrow-body airplane.
COMAC says it has already received 570 orders from 23 customers. But breaking into the international market will be challenging, analysts say. The jet will need to pass crucial tests over the next 3 years and then maintain a good safety record for at least 3 to 5 years after its first batch of planes are delivered. The price tag of the jet is about half of the competition, and China's massive market will give the C-919 an edge. But technically, it will lag behind the competition for years to come, analysts say. Both Airbus and Boeing just released new similar models. Coverage of the C-919's flight on state television had the feel of ground control for a space rocket launch. The making of a commercial airliner and bid to compete with a small group of global manufacturers is much different than China's ventures into other industries, and riskier. The aviation industry and the C-919 are symbols of national pride, Tong Wan says.
If there are any mechanical failures, such as the lithium-ion battery failure Boeing 787 experienced, the model will run into difficulty. So you can imagine how much pressure they are under. They have to make sure nothing like that will happen.
After nearly an hour and a half in the air, the plane touched back down at Shanghai's Pudong International Airport, where officials hailed the flight a national success. Critics note, however, that most of the plane's parts were made overseas. Bill Eyde, VOA News, Beijing.
You're listening to VOA Asia.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news alert from VOA Asia, Nicole Kushner-Meyer, the sister of U.S. President Donald Trump's son-in-law, is in China. She's courting wealthy people to invest $500,000 each in luxury apartment towers outside of New York City. As part of the U.S. EB-5 Visa Investment and Job Creation Program that would grant them permanent U.S. residency. Catch the top stories on VOA Asia Facebook. VOA Asia continues. New York City can be a daunting place for first-time visitors and a culture shock for foreigners. To ease those anxieties, students from more than 100 countries have the opportunity to connect under one roof at the heart of one of the most prestigious higher education scenes in the country. VOA's Ramon Taylor reports that their students have opportunity to find their place as future world leaders.
For young professionals, life in the United States' largest city has its benefits. But if you don't know where to start, it helps to have a community.
Without the international house, New York would have been a very, very lonely place for many people.
Ajibola Amzat of Nigeria paused his professional life as a reporter to pursue a graduate degree in journalism at Columbia University. But if it weren't for his dorm-style residence next door, International House, New York might have been a very different experience.
New York is a lonely place. I mean, there are many people around. There's diversity of cultures and ethnicity and all that, but still, people don't mingle.
Across the residential home's many shared spaces, mingling is more than just encouraged among the student body.
Residents stay in rooms that are by design very small, and that is so that they come out into the common areas and interact and exchange with each other. The dining room is communal by design, so you can sit with someone new for every meal.
Its approach is also cross-disciplinary, welcoming graduate students from the full spectrum of New York area universities who share in cross-cultural celebrations throughout the year. But for many of them, it's the organic conversations that form the greatest bonds, along with personal growth.
I think the way in which you engage the political discourse when it comes to systemic issues, it was a huge, huge awakening because I never anticipated it would be the case when I arrived. But I could draw on some lessons from home, and so it really informed the conversations that I had with some friends. And it really, for me, was a great way to plug into a new wave of sort of black consciousness.
While for others, such as Akhmirat Tuliyev of Turkmenistan, a discovery of diversity reignited a spark to do his part in changing the world through film.
I come from a country where we don't have different races. I've never seen a black person until I came to the United States. So seeing, you know, students from Russia, students from China, and all of these other countries coming here to, you know, to unite was really inspiring.
Among the more than 700 residents at International House, there is one common trait that many of them share, a desire to maintain the relationships they have fostered while bringing the leadership skills they have acquired back home to share with everyone. Ramon Taylor, VOA News, New York.
Developing at this hour in Asia, an 85-year-old Nepalese man trying to reclaim the title of oldest person to climb Mount Everest died at a base camp late Saturday. Min Bahadur Sachan became the oldest climber to reach Everest summit in 2008 at age 76. 5 years later, the title went to 80-year-old Ichiro Miura of Japan. Stay up to date with VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, it's safe to say that for the past few months, the eyes of the world have been focused on Western Europe U.S. elections, and the first 100 days of the Trump presidency. Meanwhile, what could become one of the worst health crises in the world is beginning to ravage a number of African nations in a lesson for the rest of the world. VOA's Kevin Enix reports that more than 2 years of drought and conflict-related food insecurity are beginning to take a potentially catastrophic human toll.
Aid organizations around the world are sounding the alarm.
Acutely malnourished children, we expect there will be 1.4 million over the course of 2017. Okay? That includes 275,000 severely malnourished. This is the most severe form of malnutrition, the kind that makes children 9 times more likely to die of diseases such as cholera or measles or even malaria.
More than 2 years of drought and conflict have created a crisis in a number of East African nations, including Somalia, Niger, Central African Republic, and Kenya. But aid organizations say they can stop this from happening.
The world needs to know the problem, how severe it is. And these are conflicts that are man-made. Between FAO and World Food Program and other humanitarian agencies, we have the strength, the structure, the logistical capacity, the technology to get the job done. What we need are resources or end of the conflict.
Food aid and relief supplies are being dropped into many of the affected regions, but it's too little. And for many of those affected in Somalia, too late.
When we declare famine, it's because people are already dying from hunger. It's not that they will die. They are already dying.
Aid groups are asking for billions of dollars to deal with what they know is coming. An estimated 30 million people need food assistance in Yemen, South Sudan, Nigeria, and Somalia. But the World Food Program says they only have the means to help 8 million of them. Kevin Enix, VOA News, Washington.
And by now you have no doubt heard of the Trump administration's revised travel ban, which faces a legal challenge later today in an appeals court hearing in Virginia. Hundreds of volunteers, meanwhile, in California wanted to send a different message to travelers from around the world as they arrived in Los Angeles. The volunteers held welcome signs in multiple languages near Los Angeles International Airport. VOA's Micah Sullivan tells us the event, organized by the Los Angeles Tourism Office, was intended to show arriving passengers that the city welcomes visitors from all parts of the world.
It was on the flight path of the airport's northern runways.
One. Two, three.
The signs, which could be read only from the sky, sent a message.
They say welcome in 4 different languages, Arabic, Spanish, Chinese, and English.
The volunteers say their city welcomes everyone.
The message today is that you meet new people here, and we show that we're all very different, and we can show that to the world and the airplanes that are flying by and say welcome.
One Indian immigrant says this is not about politics, but reaching out to others.
It doesn't matter what accent the person has, what skin color the person has, what religious faith or what sexual orientation the person has. We are all human beings.
Some say the message reflects the city's openness.
I think it's an important message because there's so much division going on in the world right now, but in LA it really does feel like everyone is welcome.
For arriving flight after flight, the greeting was repeated.
It's a beautiful city and welcome.
A message they hope was seen by arriving passengers and heard by future visitors around the world. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
And we're open to anyone who wants to listen to us, VOA Asia. We thank you for joining us today. Whether you have streamed our program or gotten our program from iTunes or SoundCloud. And we're also heard on many great radio stations like Star Radio FM 88.3 at Chongqing Christian University in Tianan, Taiwan. Hello to everybody listening there. Thank you so much. We also like to thank our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Aiden Utku, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, including Ali Ogden. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We hope you have a great day.